I have one of those cameras that stops, what do you call it? Stops recording after half an hour. Yeah. Thanks, Canon. Yeah. Sorry, guys. It's I'm coming at Canon with smoke. Yep. It's on site because it's so annoying. Do you have a Canon camera?
I have a Sony, which means it
doesn't.
Keeps going.
Oh, yeah. You're living. Yeah. You are literally sliving. Wow, I forgot to do my intro. Hello, everybody. I hope you're all well. Welcome back to Voice Notes with Dawn Teresa, and today we have a guest!
That's me!
Tara was the first ever person who invited me on a podcast, who
was
had
I?
Me... Yep, no one's invited me on a podcast before. No. You had me on twice. You
I
got
did.
Me into the podcasting gig, and I think when... I think someone recommended me to start a podcast, and a lot of... was it like a... It was someone, like a higher up type of businessy person, and they're like, yeah, I heard you on Tara Mooney's podcast, and you're really good. Yeah,
I mean, people loved our chemistry. They requested you again.
Why?
You know, I would have had you again anyway for the fun. Even if they were like, please don't bring her
please
back.
Please don't bring her back.
No, but they wanted you.
Aww.
It's nice to be wanted, isn't
it? Aw, thanks, Tara. Well, yeah. I want to know what is happening with the podcast.
Mine?
Yes.
So I had, I guess have, a podcast called Grazing Hell, and I kind of just got a bit burnt out, really. And also, because I tried to have a guest nearly every episode, and we were talking off camera before, but I think I felt like I had to be responsible for what the other person was saying as well, and like say if they communicate differently than I do, my audience would get annoyed, or their audience would get annoyed with me, because
there's a lot of cross-contamination going on there. Like, it's difficult because, sorry guys, my cupboard is open and it looks ugly and it's not. I was just telling Tara, this is a full DIY. Someone invest in me and give me a studio, please.
Yeah, we need to find a, what's it called? Oh,
what is it? Now I want to know.
The money thing. The money.
Capital?
Oh, venture capital.
A venture capitalist.
Yeah.
I need to find a venture capitalist to invest in my podcast,
that's it.
But, oh my God, what were we talking about? Sorry, I'm trying to thought.
It's a bit DIY.
It's a little bit DIY, my podcast. The thing we were talking about before then.
My podcast and people
People like it. We were saying that there's a lot of cross-contamination when you invite guests on all the time, because you don't know what their audience is going to be like. And I think especially when I think the peak of your podcast was like during the whole bread tube trigger warning bread tube, the whole bread tube debacle. And I think unfortunately a lot of these it's my laptop playing, whoopsie. A lot of these I think everyone can attract shitty audiences, but sometimes it's like there's a lot of people that are very men. I'm just going to make it clear. There's a lot of men who get very high and mighty over politics when like a woman is talking about it.
Oh yeah. You know, maybe this is controversial. My dream is to no longer be associated with the term bread tube.
Really?
I hate the term.
Really?
Yeah, it's just so... I feel like it's not really about politics per se. It's about who you're associated with, because we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. There are people who make way more explicitly political content than I do but aren't considered bread tubers, and I think it's like an elitism thing.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it's just so much pressure, because this is the thing, if you want to venture out, so I want to make like silly goofy stuff sometimes, and because you know people might associate with me with the bread tube label, they sort of go, oh, what's this, wait, this isn't meaningful, like why aren't you activism praxis? And I'm like, here's a newsflash, YouTube videos are not praxis. I don't know what to tell you, but like, I am not an activist.
Yeah.
We are not.
I'm trying to word it because it's literally been so long since this has been on my mind, because I feel like it's not really a relevant label anymore.
You've also very successfully sort of moved away from it but still kept an audience and grown your audience.
Yeah, see, the thing is that I probably say it was 4 months of doing like really explicitly political videos. And unfortunately, it was really extremely time consuming. It was extremely difficult. And also, I hate to use terms like I wasn't really intelligent enough for it, but I don't think I really had the capacity to do it, like, if I'm going to be honest. And I was making a lot less money. And obviously, like, YouTube is my job. So I then decided to veer back off into video essays. And I had, like, my audience were preferring it. And it was easier to make these videos. I could make them more frequently. I could make more money. And also, I was still talking about things which were important. Oh, yeah. And I was still talking about things which were important to me, and I don't regret doing the political videos at all. Like, it was something that I did really enjoy at the time, and I'm still very passionate about politics, but it's something which just on YouTube it wasn't the most practical thing. And I think especially when you're a woman, and I think especially at the time I was very and again, not saying that feminine presenting women get more ag than masculine presenting women, because I think the problem is when you talk about like, oh, I was really feminine presenting, like, it sort of has this implication that masculine women don't get shit, when it's like masculine women get way more shit than feminine presenting women do. But anyways, like, I was very, very feminine presenting at the time. I was extremely young. I was 21 when I was making all these videos. And I just got so much shit. Like, and I just got called stupid, like, every single day. And, like, with peace and love, you, like, if you get called stupid every single day over, like, your videos, it does start to grate on you eventually. And I was never even considered a bread tuber. And then during the peak of, like, people talking about what is bread tube, who are bread tubers, da, 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 I was literally never ever considered one. And most of the, you were probably one of the only women that I saw that was a video essayist who was associated with that. I wasn't. A ton of the other commentary girlies and femmes who were making these sort of pop culture-y internet trends breakdowns and videos also weren't considered it either. So I think it was just a case of like, women talking about things that aren't explicitly political means that they aren't a bread tuber, even though men talk about things that aren't explicitly political all the time, but they were considered a bread tuber. It was a weird time.
It was a very weird time, and I would like to move away from it. I think a lot of people feel the same, to be honest, but the biggest thing, and again, got to be careful here, but I just think because it's about association, there's this assumption that you endorse certain people or ideas because you're associated with them. And a lot of the time people be like, what's your opinion on this situation? Oh, do you support this? And I'm like, I've never spoken to this person in my life.
Really? Is that a thing?
I've had that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Or, I won't name names, if I've had friends involved in drama, you know, people be like, oh, well, you're friends with this person, so that means you endorse every single thing they've said and done. And
really?
I'm like, no, like, they're capable, you know, I say stupid things, they say stupid things. I'm not going to agree with everything that my friends say, but it doesn't mean I'm going to cut them off. Unless it's like, you know, a principle thing, like, yeah, they're being like racist, really bigoted, or assault someone. But if they're like getting involved in drama and being, you know, silly and
we
goofy.
Don't need to say our opinions on absolutely everything. I think that's something which is nice about, I always call it the commentary girly space, but it's very much like, I'd probably say it's the commentary girlies and femmes and NBs space, is that we're all, a majority of us are all mutuals with each other.
Yes.
We all support each other's stuff, like each other's stuff, da, 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 da. But like, that's basically it. Because I think I've noticed that even though we share so many, like the commentary girlies and femmes and NBs, we share a lot of our opinions in our videos. But personally for me, and what I've noticed with everyone, is that usually that's where it stops. I don't see any of my peers like talking about things on Twitter, really talking about things on Instagram. They just like save it all for their videos. And I think that's what sort of makes it, I guess, more of like a nicer space, maybe, is the fact that you aren't just dumping every single one of your thoughts on Twitter.
Literally, that's I think that's what's made me feel a lot better, is that I don't really use Twitter anymore. And I just don't pay any attention to any of the sort of drama or situations that go on between creators, because honestly, you just never know the full story. I mean, obviously, again, I'm not talking about really heavy things, but like, I mean, like
petty, yeah, like
personal,
things like that.
Personal things. It's like, I've never met either of these people, so I really can't form an opinion, you know. So it's just like, And also just mental health wise, it's like, I need to just focus on the people I know in real life. You know what I mean?
No, completely.
Sounds cold, but...
I do actually think, what a time when there was a debate of who bread tubers are. I actually remember the time there was a YouTuber or someone. I was never watching any of these bread tube videos. I did not care enough. But like, something that was interesting was that I think some like bread tube map... There was like a bread tube map that like went viral.
Yeah, and it was like, and then you were like, Jordan Teresa has no friends.
Yeah, guys, I was.
Get a picture of it, edit a picture of it on the screen now.
I'll send it to Catherine, I'll get her to insert it.
And I was friends with everyone, apparently. They made me seem really popular. I was like, okay. Which is not true.
I don't even know who made this or anything, but this is like the first time I've ever really been included in a bread tube conversation.
Yeah.
So I guess like a part of you feels a little bit validated.
Yeah, true.
It's like with being in high school and being picked for the football team or something. Yeah, sort of had that kind of vibe. So I was like, oh my God, like look at me, I'm on this. This is like the first time I've ever been considered a bread tuber. Yeah. And then someone replied like, why does Jordan Teresa have no friends? She just linked to Tara Mooney, one arrow, Jordan Teresa, no other arrows. I wasn't linked to anyone in any other way. And then Tara had all of these other arrows of all of her friends.
Genuinely, I think it's just because they'd see me interact with people on Twitter and podcast episodes. I had a lot of people on my podcast, but a lot of the time it was like people I'd only really met once in the podcast episode. And
to be fair, I like went through my social media silence phase. Yes. Like I was not replying to anything. I was not getting involved in anything. And to be fair, maybe that's a good thing.
I think that's a great thing. Honestly, you gave me this advice fairly recently. We were talking about, you know, how to navigate the space and how to avoid, you know, fallouts and personal and just like it getting to your mental health more. You were saying that you're quite selective about who you sort of...
I'm trying to remember this conversation.
Oh, right. I was like, oh, wait, am I misquoting you? But you were just saying, like, you don't speak to that many people from YouTube. You got friends?
No. Like I know I have many friends through YouTube that I love, like Madison. We both love Madison.
Yes.
And I also am meeting up with a few commentary YouTubers in New York. There's, like... it's definitely, like, it's like a selective thing. It's, like, I'm not going to try and be besties with everyone because... I've got my own friends in real life.
Exactly. And I think also it was this idea that because I think I had it in my head that if I made similar content to someone, I should have a relationship with them. And I just don't think that's very realistic.
And also it's like, we don't have to be really good friends with every single person that we like and we respect. Like there's a lot of these commentary YouTubers and my peers who I would genuinely consider like, oh yeah, they're my friend. Mm-hmm. But our friendship is... hyping each other's Instagram stories up. Do you know what I mean? But also, I think that that's not a bad thing.
Yes.
There's like a place for that. There's a place for every single one of these level of friendships. And actually, me and my friend Jack were talking about this. I saw it on TikTok. Trigger warning TikTok. I saw it on TikTok, which said people with more low maintenance ties tend to be happier. So a low maintenance tie, I would say that me and you have a low maintenance tie in a sense where... Do we ever really message each other? Not really. Mm. But we meet up once every few months. Yes. We have a blast when we do so. Yes. It's like we've never been apart. And then we go our separate ways. Yep. And then we meet up 3 months later. Do you know what I mean? That's like a low maintenance tie. A high maintenance tie is like the tie that I have with Lem. He's my boyfriend. We spent every day together. We live together. Or maybe if I lived with a housemate who was also my best friend. That's a high maintenance tie.
Okay.
And like the thing is that when you have high maintenance ties with people and when you really truly get to know people at their core, you begin to find out all the things that you actually don't really like about them. Mm-hmm. And things get grating and there's tension and things like that. You can't have tension with someone that you only see every 3 months.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So there's like, it's basically like apparently people with more low maintenance ties are happier than people with less high maintenance ties.
You know, that actually does make a lot of sense. I think I've had this recently where I've kind of realized that maybe... there's some friends you just shouldn't hold to a particularly high standard or expect too much from and just kind of expect a bit of a fun time with. And that's it. Like, don't expect too much, like, emotional
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I feel like we sort of have this thing, especially when it's like, I think someone that I follow wrote an article, I'm trying to remember who it was, I think it was Shantae, wrote an article about how when she watched Sex and the City, she felt like this sort of ache inside her that like she did not have this solid friendship group like she did in Sex and the City, and she has like these scatters of friends,
ride or dies, different friendship groups.
She didn't really have like a solid group of like ride or dies, and it sort of made her feel a bit sad. And like, I definitely get like that sometimes where it's like, I feel like sometimes I don't have any particularly really intimate friendships with people anymore. The only intimate relationship, like really intimate relationship I have, is with my boyfriend, but like all of my other friends, I see them a few times a week, and like, that's that. But also, I don't think that's a bad thing.
No.
I don't need to have a ride or die. Do you know what I mean? I'm happier spending less time with the people that I love because there's less likely to be tension.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. I do know what you mean. And I think, yeah, I think it's good to spread your support network, spread your social network. Not to, yeah, the social network, but you know, like, yes. And also, I've found if you have like one friendship group that you're really intimately involved with, it just like really limits your experiences. It's good to have people from different like backgrounds in your life and like just different. Otherwise, you just get really in your head and you're all like obsessed with the drama of that group and the happenings of that group.
Yeah, I hate friendship drama.
Yeah,
I hate it. It's so annoying. So I feel like the thing is with that with friendship drama is that it always lingers. Do you know what I mean? Like, I find that when me and Lem get into an argument, it's like me and Lem argue quite a lot. Well, not quite a lot. I mean, I guess we argue a fair bit because we live together, and we're in a relationship. And like, we will like get into a massive fight. We won't talk for like 5 hours, and then I'll be like, I'm sorry, and be like, I'm sorry as well. And then we kiss and we cuddle and we make up and whatever. I feel like when you fall out with a friend and it's like you have a really big fight and it blows up, that you can't just go back to them in 5 hours and be like, I'm sorry. The forgiveness is not as present, maybe, or you feel like it sort of runs around the group first before you can solve anything, and then I feel like that tension can stay, it can linger. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I think hopefully there's less of that if you live with the person. And the reason I say that is because I'm moving in with two of my close friends in January. So I'm like, I kind of hope that it's more like that.
Are you excited to move in with your friends?
I'm very excited. I have been living alone for the past 2 years. I lived with a partner before and then we broke up and now we share my dog.
Love a joint custody.
Yeah. No ill will. They're great. They're lovely. But because of that, I lived alone unplanned. And one, it's expensive. And two, it's very lonely.
It's so fucking expensive. Yeah. And also, it's so lonely. Like when Lem, he's like, oh, I'm going to stay at my mum's for the night, which is like every few months, I'll be like, well, what the fuck do I do now? Yeah. I'm so bored. Or like even when I spent all day cooped up in my lovely house, but I do spend all day cooped up here, and I just sort of like tap my feet away and wait until 4:30 for him to go through the
door. It's because our jobs have not, we don't really have colleagues, we're quite isolated.
Yeah, I feel like we would enjoy living alone if we worked
in office. I had like a 9-to-5 job, I'm definitely introverted, like I get socially burnt out, so I think I would like living alone if I saw people all day.
So
I am very excited to move in with friends, and the people I'm moving in with are very drama-free people, very chill, very laid back, very affectionate, you know, kind. And also they're like me in that they like their own space, so I feel like
it's a good chemistry.
They've lived together for 2 years already, so they know that it works, so that's good. Like I think it's quite a low risk situation. The only risk is that my friend, she's got a cat, I've got a cat.
Oh my god. They have to meet up.
They have to meet first. Thing is, I think they'll get along because mine's a kitten and I think he'll be amenable to it. And, you know, Percy, my friend's cat, she likes other cats. She, I think, would like a little friend, but you just don't know.
See, this is the thing. I do really want to get another cat because Bootsy is, she has single cat syndrome, like abso-fucking-lutely.
And I didn't know what this was until you explained it to me.
It's this new thing. It's like a thing that apparently is like a real thing. It's a real phenomenon
of
when
sense, no.
Cats and kittens, sorry, that's like I feel like Boots is tapping around there somewhere. Mm. When cats and kittens grow up alone, they are just more badly behaved because they're more lonely, they're more bored, especially because Boots is a house cat.
And they don't get shut down by an older cat.
Yeah, exactly. She just zooms around all over the place. And honestly, I think that sometimes, like, obviously I try to play with her when I can, but also, like, I have a life to live. And
also, you're not a cat.
Also, I'm not a cat, yeah. And she nibbles a lot, and she does this thing where, like, a thing that cats with single kitten syndrome do is they bite a lot because they've never been bitten themselves.
Mine does. Are you saying I should bite my cat?
Well, that's the thing. It doesn't work. I searched it thinking, oh, well, I can just bite her, like, do a little nibble myself. And someone was like, it's not the same sensation. So cats only learned, like, Boots does not bite me a lot. She doesn't scratch a lot, but, like, she does it playfully. When she's playing, she'll do, like, a little... Yeah. Like that. And it's extremely cute. So, like, maybe I'm the problem because I think it's adorable. But the problem is that they don't know the sensation of being bitten or scratched by another cat. So they don't know that, like, oh, that hurts. I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I do want to get another cat. But first of all, I think Lem would kill me. Second of all, Lem said that if the cat was better behaved than Boots, he would end up, like, having a vendetta against Boots. Like, why can't you be more like your sibling? Do you know what I mean? No. And then also, we could get another cat, and the cat and the Boots could not get along. Yeah. And then what do you do? This is such a tiny flat. So, like, they'd be in close quarters. It would be beef. Yeah.
Well, you would probably, I mean, again, I'm not an expert on cats. Mistarella is my first cat. I've recently rescued a cat called Mistarella. His name, it's very gender, he's a trans icon. Basically, he was dumped on someone's doorstep. They were like, look at this lovely little girl. Then they found balls. so hence Mistarella. Wait, what was I saying? Why did I get
something about single kitten syndrome and cats not getting along?
Yes. What's that got to do with Boots though? I feel like I was going to tie in Mistarella with Boots. This isn't what I was going to say, but a little cute thing I've just remembered. Mistarella, when he plays with Siggy, my dog, Sigrid, he retracts his claws. But he fucking bites and scratches at me, no problem.
It's because maybe he's probably more scared of Siggy.
She's going to be 5 this month. On the 16th of October. Thing is, though, she's a tiny dog. She's an Italian greyhound, very small, very frail. And she was terrified of him when he first came home.
Really?
She hid for hours.
Oh, I remember when I took Boots home for Christmas. Brian was not scared of her at all. Like, ran up to her, and then she got fucking terrified. But he started barking like crazy. It was insane.
Oh, I remember what I was gonna say. So I'm not an expert on cats. I've never had cats before, Mistarella. I feel like when you get a second cat for Boots, you should probably get a boy, right? Because I think if you get two girls, that might be an issue. And same with, like, getting two boys. I could be wrong.
I didn't know that.
I could be completely talking out my arse, but
I just don't want them to shag.
Well, you get one that's already...
Mine came chopped. It's because I got a kitten last time.
Yeah. Well, no,
Bootsy
he
was a kitten. Like, Bootsy was a teeny, teeny, tiny
get, if
kitten.
You get him from a rescue, that's, like, their policy. So, for example, the one I got him, like, he was only, like, 3 or 4 months old, but... It's a policy. They were like, you can't take him home till we've neutered him. It's like a policy for that place.
So that saves me having to fucking go to the vet.
Well, that's exactly it. It's like I didn't have to cover that. Like, it was done.
Yeah.
So that's nice. I mean, obviously, I paid an adoption fee, so I'm sure that contributed to that. But, yeah, so... something worth considering.
I'll think about it. Lem will definitely say no, though. But
Lem doesn't want a son?
No, he does not. He said the only son he wants is a human one. That's what he said, yeah.
Well, not that anytime soon, I'm guessing. Like,
no, thank you. Yeah. Not right now.
No.
But shall we do, I'd like to warm the vocal cords up a little bit, is to do TV show I'm watching, book I'm reading, song I'm listening to.
Okay.
Yeah, do you want to go first?
No, you go first.
Okay, TV show I'm watching is, I said this in my last episode, so this feels quite repetitive, but me and Lem are watching The Walking Dead at the moment. We are rewatching it. It's interesting to rewatch back because it was my favorite TV show. And they changed the showrunners between season 2 and season 3. And season 3 has, like, such an incredible... No, wait, no. No, this... Oh, my God. Never mind, I can't remember. But yeah, I'm rewatching The Walking Dead. I'm on season 3. It's a banger. Len was hating it at season 2. He was like, this show's so bad. Da, 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 da. Like, it's rough. Because basically, they went from 6 episodes to 14. Mm. So they had to basically just, someone who was used to doing 6 episodes.
They drag it out a bit.
14 episodes. Yeah. And it all took place in the same place. Like, it just wasn't very interesting. But season 3 is really good. And what other TV shows I'm watching? I watched the Bama Rush documentary because I'm making a video about Sorority Talk and Bama Rush. I'm not sure, it definitely won't be up by the time this episode goes up, but it might be script finished, ready to film. And it wasn't very good, which is really interesting. I talk about it more in the video, so I'm gonna save it, but it got very poorly reviewed, and I was like, surely it can't be that bad. And I was like,
and it wasn't
terrible, but you know, it's just like, it just fell so flat. Yeah. Like, it was something which had so much potential. I think the problem is that Greek life is inherently really secretive, and they don't want people knowing their business, so of course it's really difficult to make a documentary unless you are putting years worth of research and work into it. And I think Bama Rush was only filmed over like 6 months, so it just didn't go anywhere near as like hard-hitting or in-depth as I wanted it to. But yeah, what TV show are you watching?
So I finally, really late to the party, this is always the case with TV, music, anything, I finally watched The White Lotus.
Both seasons?
I really enjoyed both seasons. And I don't know if this is an unpopular opinion, but I personally preferred season 1.
That is an unpopular opinion. I haven't probably watched season 1 yet, but I watched it over Lent. So I started on season 2. I know, sue me, whatever.
I suppose it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I started it on season 2, and then I was watching season 1 like over Lem's shoulder because Lem was watching it. And the themes for season 1 over Lem's shoulder. The themes for season 1 were really interesting.
Well, this is the thing. I'll try not to give away too much, but basically the premise is that it's set in like a hotel resort. And it sounds like a bit of a nothing burger, but it's basically just people on holiday, but like it's about all their interpersonal relationships, and it's just like really interesting.
Yeah.
The first season is set at a resort in Hawaii, so it's got all these themes about classism and colonialism, which I find really interesting. The second season is set in Sicily. So, you know, it's still really good, don't get me wrong. I mean, the cast is amazing in season 2. They've got Aubrey Plaza, for fuck's sake. And
she's awesome
in it. So, like, it is still really good. I just think season 1... I think I just find the whole Hawaii conversation really interesting. You know, I've never been to Hawaii. It's one of those places I'd love to go to because it looks amazing, but I know that it now is not the time to go because it's, you know, unethical to go... you know, if you ask people from there, they say, please don't go. So it's kind of like that interesting tension of, it seems like such a fascinating place, but I won't go.
Yeah.
Until...
Yeah, I remember there was one scene that I was watching over Lem's shoulder that really made me laugh, and it's the really rich white mum that was like, it's so difficult to hire kids like my son these days. Like, oh my God. I think it's that, like, there's so many women like that.
Yeah.
That like, it's actually really hard to be a straight man these days.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but weirdly, the character of the son is less annoying than her. It's like he seemed, or at least this is my interpretation of his character, he didn't use the whole, like, oh, it's hard for me being like...
No, not at all.
He wasn't like that at all. It was his parents who were trying to, like, baby him in that way, and he... didn't want that, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, and it's totally like the son experience. Do you know what I mean? Like, because
I mean, I'm not a son, but
like,
I imagine.
Like, with peace and love to my mom coddles my brother so much. Like,
I didn't know you had a brother.
Yes, I have a brother.
Oh.
I have a younger brother. He's 18.
Oh my God, I thought you just had a sister.
No, I have two sisters, one brother. Did you not know this?
No, sorry, my bad.
Yeah, no, I have an older sister, a younger brother, and a younger sister.
For some reason, I only knew about your baby sister.
Yeah, to be fair, I haven't seen my older sister and my younger brother and my younger sister in fucking forever.
Yeah.
But I can't remember what I was saying.
Your brother, son.
Yeah, no, my brother is the baby of the, he's the youngest boy as well, so he's like the baby of the family, and yeah, he gets coddled so much by my mum.
I mean, there's the whole thing of like boy mums and I think mums and sons.
Have you made a video about boy mums, or did you put up a poll saying you were going to make a video about
I was toying with the idea.
Salem Tovar posted a poll saying she wanted to make a video about it. But would you make a video about boy mums?
Maybe one day. I think I would tie it in with the whole topic of maybe like masculinity. So that's something like, again, we're talking about research, because it's like a heavier topic in that, you know, gender.
My sorority video, I am reading dissertations, like actual, and dissertations are difficult to read because people just be putting long words in there. Do you know what I mean? So it's not like reading a nice Refinery 29 article
exactly.
and having everything broken down really simply for you. You have to like write it down and then Google the definitions and like say it over and over again to try it. But to be fair, when you understand what they're saying and you're like, oh yeah,
this I'm smart too.
This is hitting.
Speaking of, what are you reading?
I am reading Swimming in the Dark, which is a queer romance book set in Poland during the Soviet Union.
Ooh.
I actually didn't know anything about the Soviet Union before. Very on theme, but my camera cut out and I didn't see where it cut out. But basically in the next clip, I'm talking about how the second book I'm reading is The Other Pandemic, which is all about QAnon by James Ball. And in this next clip, I'm talking about online radicalization. God knows where it cut me off there. Canon, I will start scrapping you. But we were talking about online radicalization and how I find it a little bit sad. And like, my sympathy is limited at times because I think a lot of online radicalization when it comes to like QAnon and when it comes to like Andrew Tate and things like that, so much of it is confirmation bias.
Yeah,
you had those thoughts anyway, and then you just found people that reaffirmed them and have sort of radicalized your thoughts even further. Like, you sort of had these thoughts of you know, it could have started out with, oh, I'd never ever wife up a girl that has more than 10 bodies or something like that, or has like a higher body count of 5 or something like that. And then you watch an Andrew Tate video where he's calling women dumb and whatever. And
they
or
have
like,
to be virgins and all
and
that
And they
shit.
Have to be virgins and all this. And then you just end up in, and the thing is, the algorithm feeds it through. When you like one video, you get recommended more and more and more, and your views get more and more extreme. You know, it's a confirmation bias. So my sympathy is pretty limited. But then also I read in the books, but also there's someone that I follow on TikTok whose mum basically like fell into like the QAnon hole. And it's sad. Like it's sad. Like, it's like you have to grieve family members.
Yep.
I mean, and also like it incites real life violence. Obviously every nearly every mass shooting in the US has been linked to the incel movement, but also related to QAnon. A dad killed his two children's daughters because he thought they had serpent DNA, like things like that, where it incites real world violence. So it's like, sure, I have limited empathy sometimes when it comes to this radicalization, but also, you know, it's sad because people are losing their family members over it, and it's inciting real life violence. And I don't think that it's taken particularly seriously as
it's seen as an internet thing.
Yeah, it is, because old people don't know how the fucking internet works, and they don't know how algorithms work, and they don't know how dangerous algorithms can be. And I know that people love going on their whole free speech tirade and all of this, but when algorithms are radicalizing very young boys, usually young boys, something needs to be done. Someone needs to step in and like start taking this seriously. And I actually said it in my last episode, but you know, terrorism is being committed, but you know, the public and the government don't see it as terrorism because they have really Islamophobic ideas of what terrorism is and stuff like that.
They see it as like one guy having a mental health crisis.
Yeah, they just see it as like he's having a mental health crisis. And, you know, the only way to prevent these things is if we go to the actual root of it. And a lot of this root, I mean, obviously a lot of the root is like being raised in a misogynistic society, and you know, that is what is creating boys to be like this because it's confirmation bias. But also a lot of the root is these algorithms and this and unregulated internet use and
misinformation,
like things like that, that is just absolutely fucking bonkers. Basically,
do you want to hear a funny example of radicalization? Not that it's ever fun. Well, this is quite funny. So my friend, she was talking about her boyfriend knew this guy from school who basically ended up being like radicalized and became like anti-medical establishment and anti-vax or whatever because he had really hot legs and couldn't get a doctor to take him seriously or to be like helping him with it. Mm-hmm. And that he was like, oh, no one will help me, so I don't believe in doctors. Oh, so now I don't believe in the system and they're all like out to get me or whatever. And my friends and I were talking about it and I was like, I mean, I get really hot feet.
I get really hot feet too.
Yeah. And then my friend, the other friend who was there, who's a doctor, was like, yeah, that sounds like restless leg syndrome.
What's that?
I thought it was a made-up thing, but restless leg syndrome, I think it's some kind of like nerve thing in your legs and it can make them feel really hot and tingly. So she was like, yeah, it might be that. And I was like, oh, so that guy. And she was like, yeah, it sounds like, yeah, restless leg syndrome. I mean, I can't say because, you
know. And now he'll never know because he will never go to the doctors again.
Yeah, but I did find that a little bit funny because I was just like, wait, I have hot legs and I'm not committing terrorism. I get really hot feet at night. I often have to put them on a fan.
Really?
That's how hot my feet get.
Oh my God, to be fair, that sounds like hell. I have really cold feet. Lem hates it.
Well, this is the thing. They get really cold before bed, but then as soon as I try and sleep, they get boiling hot. What was the other question? You have reading.
Song I'm listening to.
Song. My song, I've been listening to a lot is Hits Different by Taylor Swift.
And I don't listen to Taylor Swift that
that's
much.
That's fair. It's about, shocker, it's about not being over your ex. she does have a few songs like that. But yeah, so I've been listening to that a lot. It's a good song. And yeah.
Nice.
What about you? What's your song?
I am listening to, what's it called? It's a song from, have you seen the film Jerry Maguire?
No.
It is the best film I've ever watched in my life.
I mean, it's a classic.
I've never seen it before. I've never heard of it. All I know is that I tend to not really watch films with Tom Cruise in them. I just don't really like him that much.
Well, he's a Scientologist.
It's not even necessarily to do with his ethics. It's more just to do with I'm not a huge fan of his performances. Like, he's not a
brilliant actor.
You know, Mission Impossible star. Yeah, I've been listening. So I watched Jerry Maguire and they play this song, The Wrong Come Up by LV. It's like a hip-hop, 90s hip-hop song. And it's this scene when he's like, show me the money. And cracks up. It's so good. Like, you have to watch this movie, Tara. Like, okay. I watched it hungover and I cried so much.
Oh, God. Okay.
I cried happy tears. Like, I was just like, oh my God.
Well, that sounds good.
So it's so good. Highly recommend. Like, Lem forced me to watch it. And he texted his mum, like, me and Jordan are watching Jerry Maguire. And his mum replied, perfect movie.
Oh.
But, so... I've written a list. Oh my God, I put my list so far away.
You submitted for questions.
Just like topics to talk about.
Okay, nice.
Things like that. So I've never received so many questions about the cow.
TM.
The cow TM. Do you want to share any exclusive scoop here with the cow lore maybe? Mm. Where the idea of the cow maybe came from? If she has an idea, she's actually real. So
yeah.
Where you guys met.
So she is not here today.
She's a flake.
Yeah, she's a bit of a flake. Don't tell her I said that.
She's the flakiest person I know, with peace and love. The cow is so flaky.
She's such a flaky person. I mean, she's the one who started the channel and she was like, do you want to get on board? And I was like, sure. And then I ended up being the only one who actually turned up to the videos. She does edit them, to be fair.
Queen.
I've got a co-editor who is a person from Brazil.
Does she not show up to the editing sessions either?
You know, she's busy. She's booked and busy, you know.
Does she have any other jobs?
Not that I know of. I don't know if she pays her taxes, to be honest.
Queen, she's off the... Yeah. She's off the... oh my God, what's the thing called when you're off the grid?
Off the grid. Oh, she's definitely off the grid.
She's definitely off the grid.
Nomadic existence.
Mm-hmm.
She's definitely one of those.
Queen.
We don't live together, so I don't keep track of
her. Is she moving in with you in January?
No.
Classic.
No.
She's so flaky.
I know. Hopefully she'll visit.
I was wondering, speaking of the cow, is what is going on with your YouTube at the moment? You know, we touched a little bit on it earlier, but how are you feeling about it? What content are you thinking of doing? Are you feeling inspired? Are you feeling a bit flat? Are you I think something which is really interesting is that I find when I go through flat phases with YouTube, it's because I'm not actually consuming any YouTube videos, really. So I don't really have anything to inspire me. What are your thoughts?
So, yeah, I haven't been consuming that much. And I'm not just saying this to be nice, but I've been rewatching a lot of your stuff lately. Because I think I've seen your trajectory and it's kind of where I want to go, in that I want to not necessarily make super duper explicitly political content, because it's been really burning me out and I feel like it's not making a difference.
That's the depressing part. That's the depressing part, is that sometimes it just, you get so much more ag for it that you're literally like, oh great,
and you're not really changing minds. And you know,
I'd rather like go out into the world and actually do groundwork than make a video
exactly. So you know, so I want to make things more about like weird little you know, subcultures, internet culture, law, you know, things that are lighter, because that's something I miss about my old videos. When I look at my first few videos, I think there was a lot more joy and comedy, and I think that's because the stakes were lower. Like, it wasn't my living.
You can poke, like when I was talking about bloody blueberry milk nails and fucking tomato girl summer, you can poke fun at it because it's all so dumb.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's all, but also it's like, the good thing is about, and I find that, I think that the commentary girlies and fams and NBs, we're on the sort of advantage in this way, because there is so much to work with these pop culture topics, and people are interested in them. Because it's like, yeah, sure, I can poke holes at like, what the fuck is Tomato Girl Summer? But also I can link it to maybe this wider problem of a lack of identity due to capitalism and consumerism, exactly, and the fact that products are constantly trying to catch our attention. Like, what do we actually like?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, exactly. You can link it to things like that. It's a lot of fun, and there's a lot to work with,
and that's
what
occupies your brain space most of the day, right? We can't, I mean, unless you're someone who literally is an activist and whatever, but it's not like I sit all day thinking about like internet politics stuff. It's like I think about, you know, stuff like, you know, putting on your makeup and all that. That's like the stuff you do, right? And what you wear, your fashion, what kind of culture you consume, films, like that's the everyday reality.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I enjoy about, you know, like yours, Mina Lay's videos. I think that's, I've been really getting into fashion content. I love clothes, but I've never considered myself like a fashion person. Like, I don't know a lot about it, or I've been learning more through like Mina Lay, through Carolina. Oh, you know, she's Polish. I don't want to butcher her last name, but she does all these amazing like historical fashion videos. You know the one.
Oh,
I mean.
Can you send those to me?
Yeah. I feel like you'll recognize her when I show you.
Yeah, probably.
We'll put the name on screen. And sort of, I think some of that is because like my inner N-log, not like other girls, she always shied away from that because I was like, oh, you know, is it predictable if I'm into those things? And I was like, you know what? I fucking love clothes. I love
clothes are fun. Yeah. Tara's actually wearing the cutest fucking outfit today. Yeah. Okay, show the shoes and the socks, please.
So it's all purple. BTS fan, am I right? Purple. So got my
even the purple Birks, guys. It's too much. I love it.
And it matches what I'm reading at the moment, because I realised I didn't answer that question. Let me get my
Oh shit, sorry, I forgot to ask you back.
No. We kind of, you know, we had a lot to talk about.
Oh my god, sorry, so that is actually
I'm reading this book. On BTS, hair in my mouth. On BTS, Lenica Cruz. It's like a, you know, The Atlantic, the publication. I really like their stuff.
It's like a bunch
of short like essays by her, all about, it's basically all her articles about BTS. And she's like a woman in her, I want to say early 30s, who has never really been into boy bands, but has like gone down the BTS rabbit hole.
Really?
And I relate to that. And I am ARMY, but I wouldn't say I'm like a hardcore stan in that. I don't know all their albums, that kind of thing, but I really like BTS. That's what I say. And I relate to that in that I never really had a boy band. I liked Busted, but like I wasn't like a Directional, whatever they're called.
Generational gap. You liked exactly. Busted.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I'm old. I am technically a millennial. But that's something, it's all about BTS. And like, this is the kind of stuff that interests me, because I'm like, it's important because it's about identity and like, you know, all this, you know, it ties into all that stuff. But I think, I don't know, so for example, making videos about like incels, like we were just talking about that earlier, stuff like that, I'm just like,
it's a lot.
It's
a lot.
Much.
And it attracts, unfortunately, it attracts a really horrible crowd. I think I've just recently stopped getting hate comments from this person who was commenting hate comments, the same bunch of hate comments on different accounts for 3 years he was doing
Oh wow, not that long.
He was doing it for time. He very recently stopped. I think he got a job. Woohoo! I think he must have sought employment.
Or he died.
But yeah, no, like I literally, and you know what, it wasn't even like they would come a few days after it. Like I'm talking the minute I uploaded the video,
someone's he would spam obsessed. It He's got with them notifications.
Hate comments about how I'm a misandrist, which I'm like, first of all, you're correct. Like I'm a misandrist, and just all these really like vile, horrible things he would leave comments about. And yeah, no, recently he stopped, but he found my channel through one of my videos about politics. And I attract, and unfortunately, it attracts really horrible people like that. And sometimes you just have to put your mental health first. And it's like, just because I talk about more trivial things now doesn't mean trivial. Just because I talk about slightly more trivial things now doesn't mean that I still can't relate it to wider issues about feminism or consumerism or race, things like that. I mean, it all, it's, you know, we live in a society. Groundbreaking. We live in a society, so that means that all these things are always going to be interlinked in some way. And personally, I find it, to me, more interesting to talk about something like, I mean, my new video, you know, I'm going to be talking about like Bama Rush on TikTok, but there's a whole like whole of things to talk about, like an iceberg of things to talk about. And I find it more interesting for me personally, as someone who's like Gen Z pop culture girly, how I can start out with this tiny thing such as OOTD videos on Bama Rush talk, all the way to performative femininity and misogyny and racism within sororities. Guess the year that Alabama sororities integrated.
Oh no. Was it like 70s?
2013.
Fuck off.
Yes. Yes. Fuck off. Yes. Like, it's no! so fucking bad. It's so fucking bad. Like, I could not believe my eyes when I read it.
No.
2013. Yeah.
That's
so
terrifying.
Things like that, where it's like, there's like, it seems extremely trivial, but there's so much
that's
like
some
meat
real
to
shit.
It.
Stuff like that, where I'm just like, I have a friend who, Elizabeth McCafferty, sorry, I forgot her surname for a sec. She is an amazing journalist in that she, again, explores things that seem really silly, but they goes really underneath the surface. So, for example, she recently went to a gravy fight festival where people, like, go... you know how, like, people do, like, mud fighting?
Mm-hmm.
They do that bit in, like, gravy.
That sounds like my worst fucking
nightmare.
Grim.
But, like, she
finds...
that sounds
disgusting.
She finds all these weird subcultures and just, like, just...
I bet there's got to be, let me guess, there's misogyny within the gravy
fighting
community or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's just, like, she just finds weird shit like that. And I'm like, this is so, I don't know, it's just, yeah. So
you want to do more stuff like that?
Yeah, just more kind of...
Can you give us any hints apart from the Oxford Circus candy stores?
I want to work out where the whole horse girl thing came from.
I love jokes about horse girls.
When did it start, though?
I feel like it was a very modern day, like, it's sort of horse girl jokes remind me of, you know, those Twitter accounts like Dory, Common White Girl.
Yes.
Do you remember those? That's what horse girl jokes remind me of. I don't think horse girl jokes are really that popular anymore. I think it's just like... everyone went to school. I think the thing is, what makes horse girl jokes quite funny is that, pardon me, everyone went to school with a horse girl.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone went to school with a horse girl. Yeah. And it's fun. Like,
and if you were homeschooled, you were a horse girl.
Yeah. And it's just funny because it's like, I think, like, obviously I'm glad that people are passionate about horses and stuff, but it is funny to see someone post on their Facebook, like, happy Valentine's Day to my rock, you are everything, I wouldn't be anything without you, and it's a picture of a horse. It's just funny, like, sorry, it is, it's funny! But, yeah, like, it's just hilarious.
Yeah.
Peace and love to the horse girls, though. Maybe there's something about, like, why are girls so attracted to horses? Because I've never really seen... a horse guy apart from jockeys.
And also I would argue, and I'll get into this more in the video, but I would argue that I think it's a bit like the Karen phenomenon, where you can get male Karens, but I feel like they don't have their own name. I feel like if a guy is like a horse guy, he's a horse girl. Like, do you know what I mean? I think it's like a genderless thing. Like a male Karen. I know they have come up with other names for it, like a Kevin or whatever, but it just doesn't count.
Nah, Kevin's not hit.
Yeah, it's like a male
best,
Karen.
I guess
he's
the best
Karen.
Thing for a Karen is a gammon.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because I hear the word, like, gammon is used a lot, but I feel like
gammon's quite an English thing, though. I don't
gammon
think
is a very English thing. Americans don't know what a gammon is. Yeah. If you don't know what a gammon is, for anyone that's
Piers
listening,
Morgan.
It's
Morgan.
Basically like Piers Morgan. So basically it's like white guys who, when they get really angry, they turn extremely red and they look like gammon. And a lot of the time they get very angry over...
Vegan sausage rolls,
Black Lives Matter.
Pronouns.
And then they have the sort of same five jokes on repeat, and they usually absolutely love Ricky Gervais.
I identify as
an attack helicopter. Oh my god, do you remember when Ben Shapiro tweeted some joke about pronouns and genders,
Mother's Day.
And how many genders there are? No, it was like, oh wait, no, it was about that,
because he does the Mother's Day thing every year,
and then someone replied like, you all have the same jokes, and then someone replied like, we have the same jokes as you do genders, and he was like, that's the same joke.
Like,
do you know what I mean? Like, it's just so like, yawn. I think it's more original material.
Yeah, also it's like, that doesn't make sense, because your joke is that we have loads of genders, whereas you have one joke.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. Even the joke fell flat about the genders. Oh, yawn, boring. So give us some hints. So we've got Ox Circus, Horse Girl, anything else? Anything that you're floating around with that you're thinking of?
I mean this is a bit more explicitly political, but I this year and last year I visited the March for Life rally in London, and I think that would be
peace and love. You are a better person than I am, because I would rather die.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. Go in more detail in the video. I don't want to go on and on, but last year I went with my friend Tom, and he filmed me, and it was not very hostile. Like, they didn't seem that bothered. People were very nice to talk to. They would let us talk to them, you know, and it was mostly pro-life people. It was quite big. Whereas this year, there was like a sizable counter-protest, which is good. We like that. However, I think it made the atmosphere more tense, and they were a lot more hostile and didn't want to talk to us.
I find it crazy that there's pro-life protests in the UK.
Well,
I feel extremely rare over here. Like, it's not like in the, like, people don't, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm ignorant. I don't see people camping outside of abortion clinics and holding signs like they do in the US.
It's not as socially acceptable here. There is a subculture there. You know what? My friend made a really good point. They were raised Catholic.
That's probably like quite the closest thing that we have to American evangelicism in the UK.
They were the ones at this rally. It was vast majority.
Oh, okay.
Catholics. Okay. Yeah. So it was very Catholic present. Very high population density of priests. A lot of young Catholics, like young Catholic women and all that malarkey.
I do find it so interesting. So I was thinking about, I remember a couple of years ago when they basically banned abortion in the US.
Mm.
Like, I do always think that a majority of, like, women especially who are pro-life, because there is a lot of them in the US, there's a lot.
Young women are more likely to be pro-life than young men in the US.
Yeah, because I think men have more of a fear of getting a girl knocked up.
Yeah.
I think so many people's, I don't know, maybe I'm riffing here. Oh my god, the sky is so blue. Sorry.
It's lovely.
Maybe I'm like riffing a little bit here, but I do think a lot of people's opinions on abortion is like relevant to themselves.
Yep.
So, for example, I'm obviously pro-abortion because I think that everyone deserves to have anatomy over whether they want to be pregnant or not. Shit happens. People get pregnant. And I actually think it's better to terminate the pregnancy than to bring a child into the world that
you are not
ready for and is not wanted.
No.
And you're not financially ready for. You're not mentally ready for. But also, I am pro-abortion because if I got pregnant, I would want the option to have an abortion. I would probably have an abortion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, I don't know when, I don't know.
You just don't know until you're in the situation, like to have the option.
Yeah, you want to have the option to have an abortion. And I think a lot of these young men who are more likely to be pro-choice probably go on nights out and shag girls without condoms and all of this, and they know that they're running this slightly risky life, so they're not going to be pro-life because they don't want to be saddled with a child if they accidentally knock a girl up. They want to be able to say, hey, I can take you to the clinic. I mean, obviously it's up to you, but I think that you should have an abortion, all of this. Obviously it's not men's place to say, but if a man is like, oh, I will pay and I will take you to the clinic or something like that. But I feel like a lot of these women who are pro-life genuinely do not see themselves ever getting pregnant when they don't want to. Do you know what I mean? Like, and especially if it's like, you know, apparently a lot of pro-life women have actually gotten, not a lot, but there is a subsection of pro-life women who have gotten abortions before.
Well, sometimes it's having abortion an abortion that makes them more pro-life, so they have a lot of guilt surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
They had a bad experience, like, because, you know, it is a medical procedure, so you could have a bad reaction, like with any medical, mm-hmm. like with knee surgery, you know. Exactly. That being said, I did have, so I was going to this because I wanted to speak to young women. The video is going to be about women, young women.
Mm-hmm.
And the future of the pro-life movement, pro-life feminism, that's mm-hmm. the focus. It was mainly men who came up and talked to me and would just talk and talk and talk for ages. And
classic.
Without being asked. And this man came up to me and he went on and on about how, yeah, I mean, I've had girlfriends who have had abortions, and I've seen how much it's messed them up and how lonely they are in their, you know, age and all this. And I'm like, one, you've had multiple girlfriends have abortions, so that kind of means by proxy you have. Yeah. Assuming it was yours.
Yeah.
So that means, so you're, if you think it's so bad, it's like, well, that was you. Yeah, that was you, yeah, too. Yeah,
it takes two to tango.
By your logic. I mean, I don't have a problem with it, right? But you're the one that does. But it was funny because he was like, yeah, they're so lonely and upset, implying that, like, they need to have children to be fulfilled. But also
this idea that, like, your loneliness will be cured with a child just is not true.
That's not healthy.
A child does not cure your loneliness. No. A child, if anything, can make you feel more lonely.
It's not a good reason. It's not fair to put that on a child, to be like, I want to be loved, therefore I'm going to have a child to fill that hole. That's really not fair on a child. That's a selfish reason to have a child. But it was just funny because he was saying that, and I was just thinking, like, maybe the reason they felt so lonely or upset is because they weren't supported in the situation. Maybe, like, I'm like, whose decision was it?
Yeah.
What was their experience? Were they made to feel guilty after?
Also, are they pro-life afterwards, or is it just you?
Well, I asked him that. That's uh-huh. the thing. I said to him, like, do you think they identify as pro-life?
I don't know where that cut off, but we were talking about this idea of what you were saying about this guy coming up to you at a pro-life rally saying, well, the girlfriends that I've had didn't seem very happy to have an abortion, so that means I am pro-life. And I'm just like, I don't think anyone is ever happy to have an abortion.
No, it's
like,
a medical procedure.
It's a medical procedure.
I don't like going to the dentist, but you got to do it sometimes.
It's not to trivialize abortion. For some people, it's not an emotional thing. For some people, it is a very emotional thing. But it doesn't, getting a tumor removed. Hello. Sorry, Lem's out of the window. getting a tumor removed for bloody breast cancer. It's also a very emotional thing.
Yeah, it's a relief, but it's also terrifying and probably hurts.
An abortion is like fucking painful and shit like that, and it's like it's a lot. And I think this idea that just because someone was emotionally distressed whilst having an abortion, which a lot of people are, does not take away, they would be far more emotionally distressed if they gave birth.
Exactly. And also it's like this idea that just because something was hard means it was the wrong decision. A lot of things in life are hard and painful, but you can still go through it and be like, I'm still glad that's how it happened, because it had to be that way.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of, like, let me think. I mean, I guess it's, again, I just think so many women's, like, pro-life stances, they have this idea that, oh, well, I'm going to get married and I'm going to wait to have sex until I get married. Mm. And then when I have sex, I'm then going to have my babies. One second, Lem's coming in. Hey!
Hello! Hi, nice to meet you.
But, I think a lot of, sorry, Lem disturbed us, and then I ended up talking about my hair and my cat. But I think a lot of these women that are, like, Oh, well, I'm pro-life because I believe it's murder. And what I'm going to do is if you don't want to get pregnant, just don't have sex. Mm. But also, I don't believe in using contraception because all sex should be saved when you have a baby. Mm. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get married and then I'm going to have sex then. And then I'm going to have like 3 kids and then that's that.
It's la-di-da.
But what happens when you fucking end up having 5 kids, for example, and because your husband wants to have sex, you end up having 5 kids and you're absolutely fucking swamped because you're a stay-at-home mom and you're raising 5 human beings. Mm. What happens if you get pregnant again?
Yeah.
Because you're not on contraception and he won't put on a condom.
Mm-hmm.
Then what? And then do you know what I mean? Like, again, it's like a lot of these women are people who think that like people who have abortions are just stupid and silly. Mm. And like, there's so many ways to not get yourself into that situation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I think people who are pro-life view, pro-choice people as like sort of, this is the impression I got at the rally, as callous and careless and like see abortion as this la-di-da thing. And maybe they think that because there's a small branch of pro-choice people who maybe say things like to sort of rile up pro-lifers. Yeah. For example, like, get rid of them babies or whatever. But like, yeah, that's rare.
It is rare. And then also it's like, I think that sometimes people's response of like, being like, yeah, kill the babies is a response to people accusing them of being baby killers.
Well, exactly, so they're trolling. It's tricky. Yeah. They don't actually.
They don't actually believe in that, you know. No. And again, abortion could be as unserious as you want it to be, but it also can be really emotional for some people, and it's like a spectrum.
Exactly.
And and then some people can get pregnant by being a little bit careless, and then some people can get pregnant by being completely safe. But it doesn't matter. You should be able to have the right and the freedom to get rid of that baby if you want to.
Yeah, well, exactly. So that was, yeah, the second time round, it was much more emotionally taxing, you know. And I found it a lot more stressful. The first time I was a lot more impartial. I mean, I've always been pro-choice, but I think the first time nothing they said really bothered me. I just kind of let it roll off my back. I was like, yeah, I mean, I don't agree, but whatever. Whereas this year I found it a lot more emotional and found myself getting a lot more frustrated and irritated.
Yeah, I could never put myself in like, you know, this whole like, I hate this whole like, oh, you should debate me.
Yeah.
Debate me.
That was literally what it was like this year.
With peace and love, I have better things to do. And also, yeah, it's just like, I don't want to put myself in a situation with people who don't have the same morals with me as me, who don't agree with me. And then one, like, what's the kicker about trying to debate these people who like are so against everything you are for? Is that like, even if like you take them down and like you line up all your arguments, they'll still just call you stupid.
Yeah,
like,
even if you have all the research back you.
Yeah, they don't care.
They're not looking. Yeah, no, because they don't want to change their minds. It's not about the facts. It's not about, you know,
it's not about the facts. It's just about like your own. I think so much of like right wingism is not only having policies that favor you and your lifestyle, but also it's about like stroking your own ego.
Oh, absolutely.
I think a lot of right wing spaces, they all basically shag each other because they never criticize each other for anything that anyone ever says.
Exactly. And going back to the whole like not wanting to have explicitly political content, or at least not focusing on that as much, I think there's this idea, you know, I do agree there's, because of the way algorithms work, echo chambers are created. But something I find interesting is that because I, you know, YouTube is a good way of delivering your videos to people that will like them, right? So I get, you know, I've had comments being like, oh, well, it's just an echo chamber, you know, all this, you don't speak to anyone with different opinions. And it's like, that could not be more wrong. Like, one of the reasons I am the way I am is because I grew up around not the most liberal people, put it like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm exhausted from it. I'm
also
exhausted
maybe like,
from...
Maybe I don't want to talk to people with different opinions than me. Maybe I don't want to talk to people whose opinions are I shouldn't be allowed to have an abortion.
Right.
Or maybe I
on
shouldn't...
On big things.
Yeah, or maybe I shouldn't want to... Yeah, obviously, like, little things, yeah, whatever, but, like... Or, like, very, like, sort of little political specifics and things like that. But maybe I don't want to talk to people whose opinions are... constantly, oh, well, what if it was the other way around? What if it was the other way around? Da, 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 da. Or people that are sort of obsessed with, like, I don't know whether vindicating themselves is the right word. Look at Lem creeping around. But, you know, like, people that are like, are like obsessed with like women being the real abusers and
yep.
obsessed with focusing on these real freak incidences of women inciting mass violence or being abusers or, you know, doing horrible things. Well, like their entire lives are dedicated to trying to find horrible women, which is like a real small rarity. I remember I was talking to my therapist about it. I can't remember what we were talking about, like Russell Brand and all of that. Mm. And then he went, you know what the kicker is, Jordan? It's always men. It's always men. He's like, when a woman does these things, it's like a real freak.
It's incident. Like that meme, not all men, but somehow always a man.
Exactly. It's exactly that. And yeah. I think that's what's infuriating is that, of course, women are, every group has bad people in it. Yeah. But if it's 98% of the time it's men, clearly it's not a, oh, they're all just bad apples.
Mm.
Clearly it's there's a problem with the way that we are raising men.
Socializing.
Yeah,
exactly.
And socializing men. Yeah.
Exactly. So
yeah. Well, that's what I got written down. Sorry, we got on so many tangents, me and you.
I know.
We got so many tangents.
We're just talking. Women. They just yak.
Something which I thought was really interesting actually was that someone asked me, if you weren't a YouTuber, what would you be doing?
Ooh.
I think this is a really good one. No one ever really asked you that.
So before I was a YouTuber, I was a photographer. And I really liked it. However, I don't think I would actually go back to that.
Oh, wow. Just like, meh, not fulfilling.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it, but I don't think it was my be all end all. I mean, it's something creative for sure. I've recently started getting into pottery.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know what, but I feel like it'll be something creative. And yeah, something maybe related to like, art or literature or something. I studied English literature. It would have to be creative. It couldn't be an office job. I'm too fidgety for that.
I have no idea. Like when I find out things about like office politics and stuff, I'm like, oh my god, like, yeah. Working in an office sounds like hell. I never worked in an office before.
Yeah.
I only ever did customer service.
I have briefly, yeah, done customer service.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, something like that. That being said, I do have like rogue things where I'm like, I wonder. So, for example, I guess this is creative too. I feel like something visual. So like maybe being a florist or something.
Oh, that, you know,
I love flowers.
Yeah.
That being said, I have hay fever. But I just know it would be something visual. It would be creative. It would be on my feet. And yeah, it wouldn't be at a desk.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
What about you?
I don't know, to be honest. I was a beautician before and I loved being a beautician, but I hated the company that I worked for. And
so you were with one
I was
for
with
the whole
one
time.
Salon, yeah, and they paid their employees very poorly. They treated us very poorly. They had an absurd turnover rate. People would leave and quit all the time because the environment wasn't very nice. But I loved my clients, I loved my job. But unfortunately, like if I was still doing that now, like it would not be feasible. Like I wouldn't even be able to afford to move out. Like the wages were that poor. Because I worked in London as well. I mean, I guess I could maybe try and do freelancing. Maybe I was freelancing before, but again, it's just one of those things where I'm like, it was a job, but I did enjoy it. I don't know. I wanted to become a midwife for a while, but I didn't want to go to uni.
Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe that, I don't know. Yeah. Again, it's one of those things where I'm like, thank God I landed my job because I had no direction
in my
life.
Well, this is the
thing.
I think it's, I'm very open to the idea of not knowing what I'm going to do after this and not knowing where my life's going to go. Because sometimes you discover new passions.
Someone else wanted to know, what are your opinions on the state of modern dating? As someone who is, you're a dater, you like to date.
Well,
do you like to date?
Not so much anymore. I'm not dating at the moment, put it like that.
Yeah.
I'm in a hibernation mode right now.
Yeah, because I'm obsessed with leaning out of the camera. Yeah. I've never been more out of the loop.
I did the whole apps thing for a while and it really burned me out. And I don't know if I'd go back to it. I mean, this is how I feel at this moment in time. That could change. I think at this moment, I would rather just enjoy being single and maybe bump into someone in life, then go through the apps thing again. It was...
Really? Were the apps really that bad? What about the time that you met me and Tara? So I was at a barbecue in Clapham and I was talking to this guy. I won't name him, but I was talking to this guy. He was so nice.
An American.
American. And I was telling him about my YouTube and he was like, oh, I went on a date with a YouTuber. And I was like, oh, really? What did she do? And then he said she does videos about feminism and like, and I was actually like, wait a minute. I was like, did you go on a date with me? Like, it was so weird. He was describing the content. And I was actually like, that's exactly like my videos. And then I was like, what's her name? And then I realized who it was. And then I searched. I was like, oh, that's her. And then he was like, yeah, that is her. It was Tara. It was so funny. I'm literally like, what? And you know, I saw him in Finsbury Park the other day.
No.
Yeah, it was him and his friend walked past and his friend waved at me. And I didn't recognize the friend. So I just thought a random man was waving at me.
Oh, no.
And I literally just went, hi. And then I saw him next to him. I was like, it's just like, hey, like, it was so weird.
So he's not included. He was very nice.
I
was just saying to Jordan earlier, I didn't mean to, but I kind of ended up ghosting him because my bathroom ceiling fell in. In my defense, my bathroom ceiling collapsed on me.
Remember when Tara Mooney's bathroom ceiling collapsed?
Literally, I'm not even saying this for comedic effect. I was in the shower, my bathroom ceiling collapsed on me. While I was showering, I was cold, naked, and scared.
You were
and
naked
there was
and
there was bits, there was chunks of ceiling at my feet.
Oh,
it was a trauma. It was like experiencing my own birth again. It was terrifying.
That would be my worst nightmare.
It was terrifying.
I would hate to have to move.
And do you know what they said to me, Jordan?
What?
When they were doing an assessment for the ceiling, they went, "Oh yeah, we should probably test it for asbestos."
Not you huffing asbestos.
I don't know. I followed up on it. I emailed them like, so,
was
you know.
Was there asbestos?
They didn't reply.
Oh, classic. Was it for a letting agent? I have so many angry feelings about letting agents. I hate them. I hate them so much. My letting agent that I rent this flat through are so useless. Like, sometimes I literally think like, I very rarely feel empathy for landlords, as we know, but I do think my landlord's probably paying like, what, 30% of the rent to these people? And they're useless! First of all, my landlord tried to blame, we had this blocked pipe problem where we didn't have access for a shower twice for like over a week. It was horrendous. Don't worry, I showered at my friend's house. I wasn't stinky, but it was awful. And they just like wouldn't reply to me because it was like over the Christmas time and I rang the emergency number and they were like, you'd have to pay for the plumber. I was like, this isn't my fucking fault, like, if my pipe is blocked. Then the landlord tried to blame us and say like, oh, you need to get like a sink thingy because apparently it was our hair when it was like deep in the pipe, like it was not our hair. Oh my god, it was genuinely infuriating. But yeah, and the letting agents were just absolutely useless. The time we tried to fix a shelf, they'd spend ages sending someone over. The time that they nearly let themselves in without permission, that was fun. Yeah,
I have a story for you, but I have to tell you off camera involving like the most evil letting agent experience. I can't share on here, unfortunately.
I've got another story
to tell, which I can say on
camera. So basically, I had this situation where this person was coming in, sorting out the boiler, something like that, like some mandatory check. He came in, sorted it out. I was home alone. I was all by myself. So he was like, all right, I'm going now, bye. And shut the door, front door. He then tried to come back in without knocking. And I went, hello. And I answered the door. I was like, are you all right? Did you leave something? He was like, oh, can I wash my hands? And I was like, yeah, sure. Like, that's fine. Let him in. Washed his hands. He then started flitting around the door a little bit. He was acting really weird. Like, guys, I have had tradesmen in my house all the time. I grew up around tradesmen as well. All of the men in my family work in trade. Like, I know how trade... It was just shifty. It was shifty behavior. And then he then leaves again. And then I'm, like, blow-drying my hair. And I hear him going, hello, 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 hello. So bear in mind, it had been 5 minutes. He then stayed in the porch of my house for 5 minutes, still hadn't left. And then I'm like, hello. And he's like, I need to go in and check something. And I was like, check what? And he was like, something, and it was just, you know, it was just like the alarms really were going off in my brain, and I just said to him, I was like, I'm not letting you back in, I'm in a meeting right now, you're gonna have to come back tomorrow when my boyfriend's in. And he was like, no, like, started getting really frustrated that I wouldn't let him back in. And then I ended up, I just said to him, I was like, just go away, like, I do not have time for you to come back in right now, I'm in a meeting. And I, at this point, I was like shaking because it was just really nerve-wracking. Yeah. And then I ended up calling the letting agents, and I ended up saying, like, I actually have like a massive complaint to make. I was like, I don't know whether, like, again, it could have just been a misunderstanding or something like that, but like, I want to know, did he actually have something to check? Was there something that he stopped missing? And then the woman on the other side of the phone was so fucking patronizing. She was literally just like, well, you see, Jordan, sometimes when tradesmen come round, they do something and they go back to their van and they have a fiddle around and they realize they've forgotten something.
But they can explain, so
then
that
they come back.
Why can he just
like,
say
like,
that?
I literally said, I was like, first of all, he tried to re-enter my flat twice without fucking knocking. And second of all, he didn't even say what was wrong. So can you not sit here and be patronizing and tell me that that's not scary as a woman living on my own? Like, I was by myself, my boyfriend wasn't in. Like, what is wrong with you?
Oh my God. Like, after this, I have a story.
And it was just so infuriating. She again didn't apologize, was just extremely patronizing. And I think if me and Lem end up moving out of this flat one day, I am going to send an email to the landlord and say, by the way, that letting agent are awful. And like, I just hate them. I hate them.
Yeah.
What else have we got here? Do, 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 do.
Oh my God. So I have a creepy man story.
Oh, tell me.
It's not to do with a letting agent, but it's to do with, and I want to preface this by saying that I don't, with hindsight, I don't think his intention was to scare me, but he ended up freaking me out.
Was this the guy that asked for your YouTube channel at the door?
I had a Sainsbury's delivery guy, and he saw my YouTube plaque, and he went, oh, I see you have a YouTube plaque. And I was like, yeah. And he went, oh, what's your channel name? And, you know, sometimes people ask that, and I feel like they're just saying it to make small talk. And I said it, and then he went, oh, let me write it down. And then he, like, started, like, searching for me and being like, is this you? And that's when I got freaked out, because I was just a bit like, oh, you're actually going to follow up on this.
And then you're going to know my address.
It really scared me.
Again, that sounds like very, like, unintentional.
But oh, I'm sure he didn't.
Men can be a little bit haphazard like that, where they don't realize, because they don't know what it's like to like live alone as a woman, and then suddenly someone that you know knows your
address. Don't understand like the everyday dangers that we go through, and that, unfortunately, and this is the thing, we go back to, we spoke about this earlier, but the idea of not all men, it's like, yeah, I know, but also it's like,
men don't understand what it's like to navigate the world.
I don't
as a
know
woman.
That I can't know that until I've, if you are one of those, it will be too late by the time I find out.
And it did actually turn out that the guy who tried to get back in, he did actually forget to do something with the boiler, and like,
but he should have communicated it better.
Fucking safe than sorry. Better safe than sorry, because that was like one of the, I mean, I've had a few times like that, but you know when you have one of those moments where you're like, I could get murdered. Like, it was one of those where I was like, I have no idea, and I'm fucking terrified.
I'd rather offend someone than end up dead. Sorry you're offended, but I want to be alive.
I would rather have a shitty conversation with my estate agent telling me how stupid I am for not letting the gas man back in because he was being weird and shifty, over being dead.
Yeah.
Like, much better safe than sorry. I thought we could finish the episode with talking about your pets.
Very wholesome.
Everyone always wants to know what's going on with Siggy, what's going on with Mr. Ella.
Oh, yeah. So, Sigrid, sweet Sigrid, that's her, you know, Christian name, Siggy for short. She is turning 5 this month. I co-parent her with my ex. So, yeah, Siggy is thriving. She's wonderful. I have to say, since the pandemic, she's become a lot less social. She used to be a lot... I think some of it is that she's not a puppy anymore, but she's a lot more introverted. She's very picky about her dogs. Like, she only really is interested in, like, other sighthounds. She's an Italian greyhound, so she likes whippets. She's a bit scared of greyhounds. Like, big dogs, she's quite scared of. And it's quite sad when you've got, like, this lovely, friendly, big dog, and the owner's like, oh, can my dog play with yours? And I'm like, I'm sure your dog's lovely, but Siggy's, like, really not into big dogs anymore. She's just become a bit standoffish with them.
Aww.
Yeah. Though, okay, brighter note, I got Mr. Ella recently, and I never thought I'd get a cat with Siggy, because she's always been, you know, trying to chase cats or whatever. However, I brought him home. He's a rescue.
Why did you apply to get a rescue? Did you just want another cat? Did you just want a cat?
Well, yeah. I got, nice. And it's way easier to rescue a cat than a dog, I think.
Yeah, dogs can have a lot of behavioural issues. Yeah.
Whereas like rescuing Mr. Ello was really straightforward. Like within the space of a week, I had him sorted, basically. Whereas the dog, getting a dog, it was a process that took like 6+ months.
Mm-hmm.
I brought him home and I had this like step, you know, several month plan in my head of like, okay, start out with them in separate rooms. They sniff through the door. Then we have the door open with the gate and all this blah, 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 blah. All these things I had planned. Brought him home. He was so confident that he was like walking everywhere
mm-hmm.
that I was like, okay, well, that's not going to work. Siggy hid from him for a bit. She was scared of him for a bit. But then like by day two, they were like cohabiting and they were sat next to each other. And now they like are actually friends. Like it's like a, you know, like siblings. Like I think she finds him annoying. I find him annoying. Like I get it. Like sometimes when she's trying to sleep, he tries to play with her. But like it's really sweet. They all like sleep next to each other. They play together. Like it's just happened way quicker than I expected. Like I didn't expect them to integrate. It always does.
You know, there's whole like, oh, they have to be in separate rooms. Then you integrate. Babe, just shove them in the same room. They'll get used to each other. They're not stupid. They're animals. Do you not? Like, I know they're domesticated, but also it's like, guys, cats have been living in the wild for thousands of years. We don't need to put up a baby gate to introduce a cat and a dog or two cats to each other. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know, like, it's a lot. Like, I remember with, when we got a cat, like when I was younger, my mum got a second cat and they like literally were just introducing to each other and they both freaked out and then they came and then it was fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe there's more science to it, guys. Sorry, don't take my
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an animal behaviourist, but yeah, it worked out really well. So I'm really happy with that. Mr. Ella, I'm not exactly sure how old he is because he's a rescue, but I think he's about 6 months.
Can you not ever figure out how old a cat
is? Oh, I'm sure if I get the vet, I'm sure the vet could tell me. But the first vet I saw, I think, overestimated his age because she said to me after, she was like, I think I overestimate, I think he's younger than I initially thought.
He's very big.
Well, yeah, he's growing, and he's, but he's still got like big ears and big paws, so I feel like he's got more to go.
Aww, yeah, I love it when they have the really he's big got, ears.
Yeah, I know.
Boots had such big ears. Oh, when I picked gorgeous. Her up, she looked like a bat. Like it
yeah
was so
yeah
cute.
He still looks very bat like I've got a funny story actually. One of my best friends has a cat called Doja, Doja Kitten. She's now become Doja Cat because she's 1 year old. She is a fluffy cat and she is an IBS queen, hot girls of IBS. Her IBS was so bad that she was allergic to like all meat. She couldn't eat like chicken, fish or anything.
Sorry, with peace and love, having a cat with IBS sounds like my worst nightmare.
Oh, it was cat disgusting.
Shit already
at the best
kicks.
Of times. Yeah.
It already I remember when Boots, because I remember when I picked up Boots, she did not, because her litter tray is like a proper contraption. Do you have that, those contraption self-clean litter tray? Yeah, I have that one. And she wouldn't go in it for a really long time. So I remember I was looking around the house getting so worried that she was like pooping in a corner and not telling me. But when she used the litter tray for the first time, me and Lem were both like, yay! Because she'd been in the house for like 8 hours. And then we were like, oh, God.
Yeah, it's bad.
So
especially
bad.
Kitten poos. Yeah. So like, wait, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, Doja's shit. So, yeah, she is an IBS queen. So they've settled. They finally found food that's good for her stomach. But it took them so many months. They tried everything. Like, they ordered, like, kangaroo and shit. Now she has insect kibble. So she's basically like the vegan of cats. But because it was such a long process of eliminating and trying different foods, her growth was stunted. So she's tiny. She's, like, kitten size, even though she's fully grown now. Yeah, I'll send a picture.
That is really fucking cute. Okay, maybe I do want a cat with IBS because Boots is, to be fair, Boots is a very, you were saying,
she's
Boots
so
is
little.
A really little cat. I mean, I guess I don't see her as little because
you're used to her.
I'm used to her,
yeah,
but she is a very.
She's like slightly bigger than Mr. Ella. And she's fully grown.
Yeah, she's fully grown. To be fair, though, I think that sometimes, especially female cats, they get a little bit of a growth spurt, like 3-4 years in.
Do you know?
Because I remember my dad's cats, he has 2 Russian blues, and they looked like kittens for the longest time. And then one day I went round like 4 years in, and all of a sudden there were these massive cats. I was actually like, what the fuck? I don't know. Weird.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, whereas I suppose with puppies, or at least small dogs, they tend to be done by like 2.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. Oh, I love Bootsy.
Bootsy, she looks like a cartoon. She's so freaking cute.
Do you believe that animals look like their owners? Which one do you think you look the most like, Siggy or Mr. Ella? I think you look more like Mr. Ella.
Oh, thank Thank you. I think it's a case of when you, the more time you spend with them, the more you start to look alike. I've been told that I resemble Siggy because, you know, we're cold and shivery and need to wear jumpers. And I think that's definitely true. But then I think I look like Mr. Ella in that we've got a similar hairdo.
Cow print.
Yeah. That was an accident as well. Like, I think people think because of my branding, I specifically opted for a cow print cat. No, it was complete fate. Like, I applied for a different cat, and then they were like, oh, what about this one? Like, we think he'll get along with dogs. So I went to meet him, and then he was cow print. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? This is fate. This is literally fate. But yeah, Siggy and I think we have similar temperaments. You know, she's a sensitive queen. I'm a sensitive queen.
Yeah, Boots has ADHD.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
And I exactly, have ADHD.
Yeah. So you and I have the same eye colour as well. Like, you know how, I don't know what eye, I think Boots has like green eyes. Yeah. So we don't have the same.
No, we don't.
But you know how like my eyes are like a few different colours?
Uh-huh.
Siggy has that too.
Whoa.
I'll get a picture of our eyes next to each other. But like she has like the blue with like the brown in the middle.
Oh my God, that's really weird.
So she, I think she might biologically be my daughter.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Wow. I feel like we should wrap the episode up.
Yeah, that's a nice wholesome note to end on.
Nice wholesome note to end on. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Everyone go check out.
Oh my God, I just realized I didn't even introduce you and what you do. I guess you're just going to have to guess.
Who is she?
But yes, thank you so much for coming on. I will link all of Tara's stuff down below, obviously. And I will see you guys next week for another episode. Bye.
Bye.